some people really love the environment where it's dynamic and fast-paced and changing and
right.
and that way. And other people really want the sort of, you know, hey, let's build a strategy and stick to it and follow the plan,
yep.
you know?
Yep.
And so, so that's just one example of a dimension of culture fit.
Hey everyone, welcome to the latest episode of the Chief Eternal Optimist podcast. I'm joined with my friend Roy Notowitz from the Noto Group. Roy and I have known each other for, gosh,
at least a decade.
Yeah, I was going to say 15 years, but
yeah,
but
maybe more. Yeah.
we'll go with 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years ish.
So now we must really know each other. Roy, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. This is a pleasant surprise to have the opportunity to talk to you.
I'm stoked that you're here. You have so much insight that I can't wait to kind of pull out of your brain. Because here's the thing. On this podcast, we talk a lot about leadership, culture. Those two go hand in hand. And you have the opportunity at the Noto Group, your organization, of talking, speaking with leaders and organizations every single day. And many of them. And some yeah. really great ones at that.
Amazing clients. Yeah, we're grateful.
So, before we jump into that, I think I actually want to get to know what I don't know about you.
Okay.
Can you give me two truths and a lie, and let's see if I can guess which one's the lie.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I sold my first business in high school.
Okay.
As a senior in high school. I won the junior Bassmasters fishing tournament on the St. Lawrence River in the Thousand Islands.
Okay.
And I was a volunteer EMT for during grad school and or during undergrad and grad school.
Holy crap. Okay, this is tough. I think the second one is too specific that it has to be true. I think, so that's the Bass, right? Mm-hmm. St. Lawrence, Thousand Islands, it's got to be. The first one, remind me of the first one again. It was,
I sold my first business.
Oh yeah.
In high school.
I think that's the lie.
Yeah. Cause okay, you're wrong.
What?
Yeah. So I had a lawn mowing business. It wasn't huge,
but, you
but when
sold
I went to college, I sold my customer list and my clients to another landscape company for you know, I don't know. It's probably like $1,000 or something,
but you sold
but
it.
Yeah.
How was the due diligence?
I used it to buy my first car.
Did you have a data room?
No, it's pretty simple. But yeah, no, I didn't do the Bassmasters. That was, I love to fish, but that
okay.
was a lie. That's
so,
why I use that as the lie.
So by the way, bringing the specifics in, I should have like done the reverse psychology.
Exactly. I sold it to you.
Why did you pick the Thousand Islands?
Well, cause I did actually grow up, spending time there.
Upstate New York.
We had a little fishing cabin in Brockville, Ontario. So I'm sort of half Canadian, eh? Like you.
Yeah, you are. Eh?
So... So I loved that experience. It was fantastic being on the river, and it was actually shaped my career in, as an outdoor person. So
very cool, very cool. Well, I appreciate it. I know you better now.
Yeah,
I know
thank
you better
you.
Now. Sold a business. This is impressive. Before you even yeah, went
I
into
was
the
an
adult
EMT.
World,
that was true. Yeah,
yeah, volunteer.
Yeah.
What do you have to do to qualify for that?
Well, first you just have to. Go and say you're interested. Then they train you. You know, I took a bunch of an EMT class and CPR and all that stuff. And then you just ride along. And at first you're just going and getting stuff. And then they start letting you drive. This is before GPS. So we actually had to like, there's a pretty big county that I was in.
Where did you do this?
This was in St. Lawrence County, upstate New York, northern New York.
Okay.
And then at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia.
Mm.
So.
All right.
Two different places. So,
did you have to like learn like CPR and
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things I credit.
Have you ever had to use it, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Multiple
you,
times.
You have?
Yeah. When I was on the rescue squad, we used to go to calls where people would be having
yeah.
cardiac arrests.
So yeah. you've saved lives.
Some. You have to get there pretty fast for
yeah.
it to work.
You were going to say something before I've interrupted.
Oh,
you.
I don't know. I mean, I think that that experience really. Gave me a lot of perspective mm-hmm. on life, and mm-hmm. I saw how resilient people could be and yeah. how fragile life is too.
Yeah.
And it taught me a lot about, like, I was on call like at night and stuff. We had pagers and
right.
so I would get up in the, you know, middle of the night, or, you know, I volunteered probably 30 hours a week on yep. different calls. So I slept when I was tired. I ate when I was hungry. I studied in between and I was exhausted, but it sort of prepared me to be an entrepreneur, if that makes sense. Cause I didn't have to have a rigid schedule. I could be flexible and do a lot of things. I always had two or three different jobs.
Is there actually, can we dig on this one? This one's really interesting for it actually is a personal, connection to me. So my cousin back in Ottawa, Canada, Ottawa. Derek, he was a paramedic for, I think it's 18 years.
Wow.
Derek, if you're listening, if I got that wrong, I apologize, but I know I'm in the ballpark. And as a paramedic, he had to compartmentalize of what would impact him. Like, you can't unsee what you've seen, so
right.
you need to compartmentalize and then keep going, right? Eventually, it actually caught up with him to the point where mental health challenges, he's like, I can't do it.
Yeah, I can understand that.
It's a long time, 18-ish years, right? Do you have... did you have any challenges with that, compartmentalizing what you
at the
can't
time,
unsee or feel what
at
you
At the
felt?
Time, no. I mean, I was young and it was, some of the stuff I saw was surreal and hard to believe.
Let's dig into this one a little bit more again. When I'm thinking, obviously this podcast, we talk about culture a lot. What was the culture like in this scenario as you're a volunteer, but you're working with the people that aren't volunteers as well?
Oh, they were all volunteers.
Everyone was.
Yeah.
And so what was what was the culture like then?
It was like any organization, I think. There were politics and stuff, but for the most part, these were really amazing people that were part of the local community that wanted to help other people. There's a bit of an adrenaline rush, obviously.
Going in? Like, there's going to be an adrenaline rush to this?
I knew it would be... I didn't really, I guess, anticipate that. But, driving lights and siren, for example, is super fun. I think what it gave me, or what I took from it, is the importance of giving back. And being part of the community, which I forgot for quite a while, because after that, I went to grad school and I did it there in Blacksburg, Virginia. But then when I moved to Oregon, I didn't have reciprocity. I was a basic EMT. I wasn't a paramedic or anything.
Sure.
So I just stopped doing it. And then I was busy working at Nike and all these other places, and I forgot about that aspect. And then 2013 is when I started, after I had just started this firm, I started thinking about what can I do to be more connected to the greater good and purpose. And that's when we became a B Corp and those things.
Is there values from that or also from earlier years that helped shape you be the leader that you are today? I know you're going to go be humble and say I'm not a leader, so I'm going to call you a leader and just go with that.
Let me think about that. I think it's perspective. Like, how important is what we're actually doing, really? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then just the idea of compassion and caring for people. And people have lots of medical challenges and other things that you see or don't see. So I think, there's certain aspects of just humanity that sort of helped, I guess, cement my values of just trying to do the right thing and trying to, serve other people. But I don't really do a ton of volunteer work anymore other than with job seekers and things.
Yeah.
It's something I want to do more of later, or someday.
I get the sense you're a very composed person, and maybe that's what you do in front of people. Maybe you'd say, I'm not composed. I'm actually like, oh my God, I'm stressed on this. What happens in urgent situations today? Again, thinking back to EMT, I'm going, so now if I go to today, crisis happens. Do you think you're really composed and measured, or do you're like, or maybe I'm a duck above the water. I look that way, but underneath I'm like,
I don't hide my feelings very well, but I think I'm just an intense person. And I think, I get a lot of that from just having three jobs, being in college, doing all the, doing all the things, but then also just starting two search firms, and it takes a lot of energy and a lot of passion. And I think, you know, that intensity and resilience has helped me.
Okay, I have so many questions now. But let's go chronologically for a moment before we before I dig into one. I actually want to talk to you a bit about the dip that happens in businesses and how you manage through that, like with, you know, starting your own company. But prior to that, let's go when you're not an entrepreneur. Nike. It's just a fascinating company. So I'm almost like, can we peel back that onion? What was it like to work there? What was the culture like there? What did you like or not like? What, you know, type thing? What did you learn from it?
Well, first of all, I have to preface this by saying, you know, that was a long time ago. This was in the late 90s. A lot has changed since then.
Sure.
But what I can say is that I remember being really excited to work there.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy and the mission was super powerful.
Mm.
I also got to learn from some of the best minds, some of the best people in merchandising, brand, design, logistics, supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it was just an incredible experience. They, you know, are really good at planning and implementing, you know?
Yeah.
And so that sort of cycle of business was sort of ground into me. And then, you know, I was there, like I said, in the late 90s when there was a lot of growth, especially in the apparel division where I was. It just kind of really...
What was growing in apparel back then? I'm trying to think of what was really hot.
So what happened then was they were selling a lot of t-shirts with the footwear for a long time.
Okay.
And then they started coming out with dry fit and performance apparel.
That's when dry fit came.
And so the whole thing that grew from a few hundred million dollars to $3 or $4 billion in that 3-year period was all about performance apparel. They literally created that whole category, enhancing the performance of athletes through fit and fabrication and functional garments. So that's kind of what fueled the growth. It wasn't even taken seriously at first. And then now, of course, it's such an important business for them.
And are you still doing work with them, by the way?
Not directly, no.
Yeah. Okay.
No. But they're really big. They have a huge recruiting team and they don't, you know, we tend to work with companies that are more like 10 million to a billion, sort of small to mid-sized growth oriented, some bigger, but that's kind of our sweet spot. But, you know, the values back then were kind of more similar to what it was in the early days. So in the 70s and 80s, so the culture there at that time, I feel like I was like employee number 33,000 something. So I got a sense of what it was like. The values were performance, authenticity, commitment, innovation, and teamwork.
Okay.
And so that was what we lived and breathed. And so, of course, that evolved.
Yeah.
Now it's a much different company than it was when I was there. It became much larger, much more matrixed, much more. I mean, it was always consensus driven, but now it's a little more top down. There's, you know, like with any company, the essence of what it's like to work then versus now is completely different.
You know, one of the things that strikes me about what I've learned from the Nike culture is the bigger you get, or the higher up you are in an organization, the more reliant you are on data. And hear me out on this. With you're a junior level person, if you will, using hierarchy, presenting to a higher level. The higher level person needs data because they can't just trust gut because they're not involved in the detail. So I preface that and I go, and I think about Nike and what I've heard. So correct me if I'm wrong. They are not data junkies. In fact, they're like, we just know, we just do it literally and figuratively, especially on the creative side. Like there is no, we're not doing market research on this.
Well,
true or not true?
I probably think, I don't know now. It's probably not true. It's probably very data driven is my guess. But, you know, some of the challenges that they've had recently, it, from my perspective, again, completely from the outside, is that when you have, when your organization grows at so much and you have roles that become more siloed and you have people thinking about sort of projects, things that they want to accomplish for the business, there's a lot of duplication of efforts and overlap and competition over, you know, getting resources and things. And so what that does is it just creates a lot of chaos and inefficiency and politics. And so, you know, it's part of the reason maybe now why they part of the reason maybe now why they needed to sort of trim back, refocus.
Yep.
You know, they've organized in different ways over the years, so I don't know what the right structure is, but I'm sure they're always thinking about restructuring and things like any company.
I think you're right. And as you learn more, you adjust. I'll just say this one soundbite from what I understand from the Nike situation is, as a business, they decided, let's get out of a lot of bricks and mortar retail. Let's go very focused digital, DTC. Mm-hmm. That was very profitable, but it didn't actually make up for all the revenue that they lost. And now they're like, they're basically going, we swung the pendulum too far,
right.
Which I think happens in society way too much. I think that's what's happening at Nike, is they're coming, not leaving DTC, but we're bringing back bricks and mortar more.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
So the structure is going to change again.
So, you know, obviously I think the culture from those five values that we used to have evolved, right? So they have all these maxims and different things. I'm not sure if a company can keep those same values, or if they need to evolve, or maybe they need to reflect back now and think about the values that they want to focus on moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have to say that, you know, it was a great place to grow up. And during the time I was there, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity that I have and had there, and what it's done for my career. So I love that company. I want it to succeed. Yeah.
They have done clearly some pretty amazing, magical things. Gosh, they're like culture, like trendsetters, not just like culture internally, culture globally, and let alone in the country. So it's really, really fascinating. So when I think of the Nike culture, again, I've never stepped inside the building. I think of a lot of very expressive people, likely over-indexing extrovert. I don't know that. That's just a perception. A couple things for you on this one is, one, is that perception right? Two, would you consider yourself an introvert or extrovert?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think is most effective in leaders? Because you are constantly talking to leaders and looking to place leaders into organizations around the country.
Yeah, that was a great question. I mean, at Nike, there was a lot of big personalities, a lot of athletes, a lot of people who were competitive and were really drawn to the brand. I mean, the brand is about top performance, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but there's lots of different personalities there too. And I think that's important to have different personalities, different. I think for myself, I'm kind of an ambivert. So I kind of go between the two. Like, I really am energized by people, and I love these types of interactions and stuff. I love going to, you know, parties and events like what we were at last night.
I was going to say, how about the party last night?
Yeah.
Was that like, that felt good?
That
or
stuff.
Was that like,
I love like trying to meet people that I haven't met before.
Okay.
And just looking around the room and being like, I want to get to know that person. And I just go over there and I love doing that. So, but at the same time, you know, I'm on the phone and on videos all day, and sometimes I just like to go home and you know, not have a lot of, like, go out with friends or just, like, have a little downtime.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, ambivert. So in terms of, like, leadership, I really don't know that one type is better than the other, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I think there's other leadership qualities, which we can talk about, that that might be more specific around what makes a good leader. At the same time, I think a leader who understands more about themselves, who's self-aware, and who understands that people have different levels of comfort in different situations, and being able to adapt and have a well-rounded team is probably the most important thing.
I have an interesting one for us to play on right here. So you and I actually have a case study that worked out really well. So I'll preface with that. Our CFO, Jerry Hart.
Yes.
And you, through the process, go, this, like, you told me, you're like, Jerry's going to be a great culture fit, which, by the way, you were right.
Yeah.
What is it like, if you use that example, because I'm thinking about the audience is going, how do I find the leadership, and what mistakes do people make, and when do they not make their, like, how do you help assess that culture component? And I think Jerry's a good example. I know Jerry won't mind us talking about him. Of why that made sense from your perspective as you got to know him and you knew the team at Noon.
Yeah. I mean, so basically your question is how do you view culture when working with clients, right?
True.
Is that
Exactly true. That's you're right. Gets, okay. I just went very specific to Jerry, but
yeah, I mean, we can talk about Jerry too, and it's been a while. So
that's fair too.
But you know, culture is influenced, I think, by each individual, and the energy and the attitude that they bring to the table. You know, however, it can also be shaped and transformed in a positive way and a negative way, depending on each and every person you bring in, right? So if Jerry wasn't a good culture fit, that would have been difficult, right? And it would have set you back maybe 6 months or a year. So, or it would shape the culture in a way that was less healthy or wasn't exactly how you were envisioning it. So I think leaders today really need to think about culture as a competitive advantage.
Agree.
And it's about how to get inspired performance from your team.
Yeah.
So that is like, how do you create psychological safety? How do you make it a place where people feel secure in their roles and open to share what they see as obstacles or opportunities? You know, there are many other things culture leaders can promote, like accountability and trust and innovation and sustainability and community and connection to the greater good. So really, like, there's a lot of connectivity, I guess, to thinking about your culture and how and being intentional about it.
So help me on this one. You're advising Kevin Rutherford, building his leadership team, needs a role. Right. So let's forget about Jerry for a moment. We actually find John Doe or Jane Doe, doesn't matter. And I'm like, I think Jane Doe is such a great add to this leadership team. And then you go, I don't think this is a good culture fit. Has that happened to you?
Yeah.
Where you're like, guys, I think you're missing on a culture fit or culture add.
Yeah, I like that you said culture ad because it used to be all about culture fit. And and now I think people have realized that they don't have to find people that are exactly in their self-image 100%. Or who communicate in exactly the way they do or went to the same school or have the same like positive or have the same like view of the world. So
how do you evaluate culture fit?
Yeah.
Meaning, here's the thing. Have you encountered situations where the team thought this was a great person to add to the team and you're like, I think this person may not have the right fit or add to the chemistry of what this team's about? Yeah. Has that ever happened?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that you use the idea of add, not just fit. I mean, it used to be prevalent that culture fit was the thing that everyone focused on to the detriment of like looking at other competencies and capabilities. And, you know, I think my philosophy is that you can have five people with the same job title. They're going to approach it five different ways.
True.
So it depends on how they communicate, how they influence, how they make decisions, how they lead. So culture fit is, you know, much broader than just, is this person like me? Or are they going to fit in? And sometimes you want to bring people in to shake the culture up. Like you can decide, like we had one search, this last summer where we could have gone with, the sort of industry, you know, tried and tested true, like, person, or we could bring somebody in with a little bit of a different background, brought sort of would challenge the company a little bit more and take their product to the next level. And so they went with that because that's the stage they're at. They're like, we kind of want to take it to the next level. And this is going to require somebody who's going to, you know, bring in some fresh ideas and it might be uncomfortable. It might be. And so some of it depends on really like what the company is trying to accomplish with the hire and how much different they want the person to be or how they want or how like you, there's the culture that you have now and then there's the culture that you aspire to. And so thinking about, okay, well, how are we going to sort of move? Like maybe it's more accountability or more, things that you want to put sort of add into your culture.
I like what you're saying there. I'm with you. You can agree or disagree with this truly. In fact, if you disagree, that'll be really fun to have this debate. But let me give
you... I like to disagree a lot.
Let me give you my lens on culture for a moment. And here's the deal. I think not all cultures are right for everybody.
That is true. I agree. Oh, I absolutely agree.
And the example that I use is, you know, in the case of Noon, our mission was really clear. It was about empowering the world to move more, as in let's get more heartbeats in. And if you couldn't connect with that mission personally, and by the way, it could be you or it could be anywhere in the journey, and you want to get back on that and put it for the forefront, that's perfect. But if you don't buy into that, then you're going to be miserable in this culture, because guess what? We talk about it. We live it all the time. And so when people opted out in an interview, they're like, this isn't the right culture for me. I used to say to the team, great job.
Yeah.
Because you're really clear.
You're trying to attract and repel at the same time in an interview process.
I love that. Attract and repel at the
same
time.
So if you keep it real and you really can communicate what it's like to work there, I think, so there's two types of people around the idea of culture. So, for example, if you're a growth-oriented sort of earlier to mid-stage company and you're making decisions, it's a little more fluid, you know, or if you are sort of a maintenance sort of, you know, you set up a plan and the plan goes as, you know, you follow the plan and there's not a lot of
deviation.
Fluidity to that.
Okay.
Some people really love the environment where it's dynamic and fast-paced and changing and and that way. And other people really want the sort of, you know, hey, let's build a strategy and stick to it and follow the plan, you know?
Yep.
And so that's just one example of a dimension of culture fit that may work for some people and not for others.
I love that. And our friend you introduced me to, Scott Allen, and when he was over at Hydro Flask, prior to that, he came from the tech world, Silicon Valley. And Silicon Valley is renowned for being a hustle culture.
Yeah.
And Hydro Flask is not renowned for that. And he kind of used that juxtaposition. And what was interesting is a hustle culture isn't bad.
Yeah.
It just may not be for you, but it might be for you.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I think back to that time because we helped Scott build his leadership team in the early days and actually even beyond that.
Okay.
He brought so many great things to the table, just having a different perspective. Mm-hmm. One of them was like he knew he had to capture market share in a lot of different channels in order, because there's competition, and he wanted to, that was their strategy. So I remember him specifically saying, we're just going to go get as much sales and accounts as we can in as many different areas as we can.
Yeah.
We're going to blitz the market basically. And whether they could deliver or like all those things, I don't know. But, but you know, he was pretty smart in how he tried to really capture that and build a brand, even though he didn't even have experience building a brand. You know, he knew he had to build something, that people connected to emotionally, and he hired the team to do that.
And they crushed it. They did so great.
We did a podcast together called was all about hiring ahead of the curve.
Oh, okay.
And so he and I talk about hiring ahead of the curve, and he did a phenomenal job at that. But these people were also able to reach back and sort of be hands-on.
Yep.
And because they also had entrepreneurial experience.
We'll put that in the show notes. I think that would be really interesting if people want to go listen to that podcast episode you did with him.
He's great.
That's great.
Yeah, I've enjoyed working with him and his whole team.
Here's a question that I have. Knowing you've been through a lot as an entrepreneur building this business at Noda Group, and there are dips and challenges. You alluded to that a while back, early in our conversation today. Can you tell us one of those times where that was, and where, like, was there a moment where it was so bleak? You're like, I don't think this is, I think we're not going to make it.
Oh.
And then how did you break through?
Oh, yeah.
Because you did make it. You're here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll keep it real. You know,
please.
Like, I started this firm in 2009.
Okay.
It was kind of a tough economy, but a great time to start a firm. Because, a lot of the competition sort of died off. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we started in 2009 And the first few years, it was pretty simple. I was doing all the work, and it was, we didn't have a lot of overhead, you know. And then as we started to grow, it got really exciting. But we hit a point where we had maybe over-engineered our process a little bit internally, and people were getting burnt out, and people had been there a long time. Mm-hmm. And for different reasons, I think I had 4 people leave around within a 6-month period for different reasons, all good. They've all been successful, and we have a great relationship with them. But I had to dive in back in, you know, that was half my team.
Yeah.
So I had to dive in and be hands on. And, of course, in a consulting business, like that's the production too. It's like you're cut, you know, go from 8 cylinders to 4 cylinders, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, the productivity just tanked. And I had to rebuild the team, but also had to think about, okay, well, what is it that, you know, how do we do the same or better, get the same or better results with less effort? And so I hired somebody who's now our managing director, and she had a Lean and Six Sigma background, and she had worked in CPG. And she's like, first thing she said is, why aren't we using the systems the way it was they were designed? I'm like, it's a good idea. I don't know. We just thought we could improve it by putting in all these different methods. So we started just to really focus on streamlining, and we were able to double the business. But in that time period when I was working, I actually worked myself almost into the hospital. I was so exhausted. And so, you know, that's not healthy. And I questioned why I was doing it for, you know, often. And I've had different points and where it's just like super hard and you have to push through. So I'll tell you one thing that's personal. When it was really hard, so let me back up. So at the same time that I had all these people leave and we were trying to rebuild, we also had purchased a building and we're remodeling it. Cash was a lot tighter than I thought. We had 2 cars. I didn't need a car because I walked to work. I sold a car, to make payroll. But my wife, one night I was telling, you know, stressed out. She said, I believe in you. And that was everything because, you know, I knew that we could do it too. And we're very much partners in life and in business. But it just helped to hear that.
I could feel it as you're saying that. Like I can feel it come through, and I love that you shared that. Thanks for the courage of, you know, your wife saying to you, I believe in you. I feel that what you're saying.
It was huge.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
It got us through.
It's a really big deal. I think that's, by the way, what I think, even when it comes to team culture, quite frankly, people just want you to believe in them.
Yeah.
And not only I want you to believe in me, we need to believe in each other.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the power that hope propels you forward. Awesome stuff. Yeah. You rock.
Thank you.
You rock.
I hope I answered that okay.
You answered it more than okay. Awesome. We're all making mistakes. What are common ones? So that those looking to hire and build their teams don't make those mistakes. What are common mistakes happening when it comes to culture and hiring?
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, we talked about the idea of like thinking that your company is precious and then negating a lot of candidates that could be a fit for things, saying things like, I'll know it when I see it. I hear that, you know, sometimes.
Right.
And, the other thing is, you know, not having a common definition as, you know, the culture is created by everybody. But if you don't have a conversation about what is our culture, what is it that we're going to ask candidates? What questions can we ask to sort of understand if their responses are good responses or mediocre?
Do you help them with that? Like
companies,
like what questions?
Yeah. I mean, so we start talking a lot about, you know, culture and, you know, how do you evaluate what's worked, what hasn't?
Exactly.
Is another thing, reflecting on what hasn't worked. And what questions did you wish you would have asked? Or what questions do you think, what are you listening for when you ask a question related to culture, mm-hmm. so that we can understand how you're evaluating that? But if everyone has a different filter, no one's going to make it through.
Yep.
So everyone has to be aligned on, so first of all, the concept of culture and looking at it in a more broad sense, but also really understanding what they're listening for, and that people are going to show up in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so to get multiple perspectives on that, but also, like you said, keeping it real. So this is what it's like to work here, so that people can self-select and understand if you were also trying to help the candidate figure out if this is a good fit for them. So, taking time before starting a search to discuss the culture and the type of energy, competencies, personality traits, and those types of things are really important. And collectively, just aligning all the stakeholders on the spec and thinking about those questions and what you're listening for.
Awesome. Right. Roy, I could, as always, talk with you all day long. There are so many places I could still go, but time, we got to
keep
moving.
This again. Yeah.
So we'll do a second take.
I love this. It's fun. I really had a good time. And, this is something that a topic that I'm super passionate about. And, I have a whole podcast related to, hiring. And
on that note, where can people find you?
Yeah. So I have a podcast called How I Hire. Mm-hmm. So you can go to howihire.com, or you can go to our website, notogroup.com, or any platform that you listen to podcasts. I've been doing it for about 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And I only do once a month, but we've got 60 plus episodes.
Yep.
And also notogroup.com. That's my firm, and we do executive recruiting in the consumer space. So you can find us there.
Best in class.